And welcome to the National Football Authority Radio Podcast here at NationalFootballAuthority.com. I am your host, Matt Baxdell, a.k.a. Bax. And thank you so much for joining us here today. We have a packed show for you coming up. We have our NFL writers lineup coming up later in the show. We'll be joined by Daniel Wolf to talk all things Cleveland Browns. And after that, we're joined by Russell Baxter. And he is the pro football guru. You won't want to miss it. It is a great rundown of the National Football League and everything that's going on. But before that, let's get to a little bit of college football discussion. After all, it's NationalFootballAuthority.com. We got both college and the NFL covered for you. And college is more of my side of the football. I am the podcast host here. I have a background doing sports radio. You know, so this comes natural for me being able to talk both sides of the ball. But my real passion is with college football. And that's where most of my articles come on. And, you know, there's a lot of people talking this season like it's a foregone conclusion that LSU or Alabama is the best team in the country. We're talking about this big Titanic showdown between number one and number two that's going to happen in November on November 5th. But you know what? This is looking incredibly familiar to me. In fact, I'm going to bring up something here that I think is going to stun a lot of people. And I wrote about it today on NationalFootballAuthority.com in my article about six things we learned this week in college football. But I don't think the SEC is the best conference in the country this year. That's right. I said it. I don't think the SEC is the best conference in the country this year, and here's why. Right now, there are two superior football teams at the top of that league, in LSU and Alabama. Nobody's questioning that. And I vote in the NationalFootballAuthority.com top 25 poll, and I have those as my number one and number two teams right now. But beyond those two teams, what does the SEC have this year? They have an Arkansas team who's good, not great, who was drilled by 24 points by Alabama. Then they have a very young Auburn team that I think has exceeded everyone's expectations. Then the West has the two Mississippi teams that aren't very good whatsoever. And then you have the East, where South Carolina just lost their best runner, Marcus Lattimore. They're going to be a diminished team because of it. Tennessee and Florida are clearly down. Vanderbilt and Kentucky are, well, Vanderbilt and Kentucky. And meanwhile, Georgia, who started the season with two straight losses and has some flaws of their own, is the team that looks like the team to beat in the SEC East. So what you have is two extremely good teams, one pretty darn good team, and a bunch of average also-rans right now. And you know what this reminds me of? It's almost uncanny how it reminds me of this, is the Big Ten back in 2006. Everybody remember about the Ohio State-Michigan game? It was 2 months of buildup. Oh, they're going to face each other at the end of the year. Oh, they're going to be undefeated. Ooh, should there be a rematch for whoever loses if it's a close game? You know what? It's not just that that's the similarity to the Big Ten from 2006. It's not just the two teams in the country that everybody automatically assumes are the two best. The Big Ten that year had a third team that nobody really talked about. That was Wisconsin. Wisconsin went 12-1 that year and finished in the top 10, kind of like Arkansas did. It looks like it's going to this year. After that, they had maybe one team that was in the edge of the top 25, and that was Penn State in a Big Ten case back in 2006. They're the equivalent of Georgia now. But the rest of the teams in the Big Ten that year were a bunch of also-rans who got shellacked by the top couple teams, and there was a clear difference between the very top of the league and everybody else. And you know what? That's what the SEC has this year. You know, during this five-year unprecedented run of success we're seeing with the SEC, their calling card was their depth. And that depth isn't there this year. So with that in mind, if the SEC is not the best league, which league is the best this year? In my humble opinion, I think it's the Big 12, which stuns a lot of people because the Big 12 just got raided. They lost two teams last year. They're losing Texas A&M after this year. They've only got 10 teams. But look at it. Right now you have two teams just like the SEC that are undefeated and looks like they're going to have a big clash at the end of the year. That's Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Those two teams, they're number 3 and 4 in a lot of people's polls. And I can tell you right now, if they're both undefeated going into the Bedlam game at the end of the year, one of them is going to play for the national title. But look beyond those two teams. First of all, you have a very good Texas A&M team who SEC fans will say, well, I lost to Arkansas. Fine. That's fine. But Texas A&M is still a very good team for depth. On top of that, you have surprising Kansas State, who's 6-0 right now. Kansas State is 6-0. That's some great depth if we're not even talking about a third undefeated team in their conference. Then look at the rest of the league. Baylor with Robert Griffin III is a 7-8 win team by the time this is all said and done, and they can jump up and beat anybody. Texas is still Texas in terms of talent. And then, of course, you have Missouri, who's always been competitive, and Texas Tech, who right now is 4-2. That's a lot of depth in the Big 12 Conference this year. And if you look at their out-of-conference records, it's just as good, if not better, than the SEC's in most regards. So as of right now, if I had to pick the best conference in the country this year, it wouldn't be the SEC, and it would be the Big 12. Now, go back real quick to that 2006 comparison that I just made with the Big 10 versus this year's SEC. Everybody remember what happened with the Big 10 back in 2006? Ohio State and Michigan played a game to end all games, and then both teams never got it back together for their bowl games, and the Big Ten got a black eye from the situation. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily going to happen this year, but I do think it's an interesting harbinger, because right now, even though I have LSU and Alabama number 1 and 2 because I think they've played better competition and been more impressive in the victory, the team I still think the best team in the entire country is Oklahoma. And you know what? Just like that Big Ten in 2006 where everybody assumed that the conference would win the national title, everybody's assuming the SEC is going to win it again this year. I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case. I'm not going to rule it out because anything can happen in the world of college football. But I just don't think that this is the SEC's year as the best conference, and I think this is the year that their championship streak comes to an end. All right, well, there's my little college football rant, and I assure you there's a lot more content coming out in college football on our site. We got a lot of great writers, Mitch Kaufman, Bob Evans, myself, and, of course, our editor-in-chief, Nate Custer. A lot of great articles at nationalfootballauthority.com. But, you know, let's go back to the NFL side of the coin here. Coming up next, we're going to bring in our NFL writers lineup. We're bringing in Daniel Wolf. We're bringing in Russell Baxter. We got a lot of great talk. We're going to discuss the Carson Palmer trade that the I cannot believe how much the Raiders gave up to get a quarterback who, frankly, has only been to the playoffs twice and has a bum knee. But we'll get to that over there. We'll talk about the Packers, whether they're going to repeat this year. Are they really as good as they've looked this early? And a whole lot more. You will not want to miss it. So keep it locked here. On National Football Authority Radio, the NFL Writers Lineup is coming up next.
You're listening to National Football Authority Radio. NationalFootballAuthority.com, the shooting star of football coverage on the internet.
And welcome back to National Football Authority Radio. I am Matt Baxnell, a.k.a. Bax, and I am your host. And we're going around tonight for the second NFL Writers Roundtable here. And tonight we're starting off with not just the CEO of this site, not just the founder of this site, but also a very tied in man to what's going on with the Cleveland Browns. I'm talking about Daniel Wolf. Daniel, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good, Bax. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing quite well. I imagine that I think we're both doing a little bit better than Peyton Hillis seems to be these days with the whole mess going on up there about whether or not his agent told him not to play. What's going on up there? Just tell me how people are feeling about this guy. I mean, he was the Madden cover guy this year. Have people's opinions changed to him so quickly? And were the Browns ever close to dealing him this past week at the trade deadline?
Well, as far as what I've heard from several people that I talked to and just from, you know, following other local Cleveland media, I think what it was ESPN's Chris Mortensen was just generally stating how if someone was going to be approaching the Browns general manager Tom Heckert and talking about Peyton Hillis, then, you know, he might actually listen, because that's his job as a general manager, is to actually listen to, you know, any offers about any players, no matter who their name is on the roster. And I think by Mort saying that the Browns could be persuaded was more not saying that the Browns are willing to trade him, but that if someone was going to call, that they were going to listen. It didn't mean that the deal was actually going to be done. And then, of course, you know, I'm not going to beat around the bush anymore when it comes to a lot of the Cleveland media, but a lot of them, I think, watch TMZ way too much late at night, and they're starting to actually influence their reporting skills, and they're just blowing things out of proportion and turning non-issues into issues when there's so many other stories to talk about when it comes to the Cleveland Browns. Obviously, Peyton Hillis is one of the biggest players and names, you know, because of his breakout season last year and the Madden cover, like you said, but, you know, they tend to focus on, I guess, the shock reporting, or like I said, the TMZ reporting more than anything else. And, you know, I would have to blame them. You know, that's the reason this whole thing got spun out of proportion to the point where, I mean, I don't think any fans are really hating on Peyton Hillis right now. As far as the ones I interact with on my Twitter account, at DanielWolfNFL, they all are very positive. And, you know, whether it was traded or not, they really understood it was a business. But at the same time, a lot of them just love the guy so much. And even with all this passing, the trading deadline passing, they still seem to love him and support him fully and hope that he gets re-signed to a extended deal by the Browns front office.
Yeah, I think you've seen a lot of sensationalism from the Cleveland press. And let's face it, of all the sports cities in the country, Cleveland may be the most jaded since the title drought in pretty much every sport now is extended almost to 50 years. So, you know, it's unfortunate that I think this happened, but I think you're right on that. It seems a lot of times people are going for the shock value of a story versus the actual substance of the story, and that can be a real issue. And let's face it, Cleveland has one heck of a running back in Peyton Hillis. Just because he had a slow start to the season, just because he hasn't really lived up to people's expectations yet, doesn't mean he isn't going to the rest of this year and in the future if they can re-sign him. But, you know, speaking of the running back position with Peyton Hillis, another guy who's had a really good start to the year, but I wouldn't say really good, but at least he's shown that he can play in the NFL, Montario Hardesty. Is maybe his performance started to give people a little more pause on whether Hillis is the front line A-carrying back, or is sort of, you know, looking at it and saying Hillis is still the guy and Hardesty's a great second option?
Well, I think you have to take in consideration that when it comes to Hardesty, in the 2010 NFL draft, the Browns gave up quite a few later-round picks to move back up into the second round to pick him, disregarding his injury history with being at Tennessee. And just the fact that so many more picks besides just one standard pick was invested in him, I think, you know, people have a higher value in him and more anticipation of a higher level of performance. I'm not saying that he's like a first round pick, but you know, if he didn't have those injuries in Tennessee, if my memory serves me, he could have been projected as being a first round draft pick. Right now, I think people are just in love with Peyton Hillis because he's a blue collar guy. Excuse me. He's a blue collar guy. He came out of nowhere and you know, Hardesty is kind of that guy where, you know, people are just crossing their finger at this point because, I mean, truth be told, it was like, what, the guy's seventh carry in training camp last summer in 2010 when, you know, he all of a sudden didn't get up off the ground because his knee got blown out again. So, you know, I kind of hope that I answered your question with that, but I think right now, you know, Hillis is definitely the guy. Hardesty is the backup. Hardesty could be the future because, you know, let's be honest, Peyton Hillis, his style of running, I mean, he's not going to have a 10, 12, you know, year career in the NFL. You know, those big bruisers usually don't last, you know, much more than 5, 6, 7 years.
Well, I think another thing it sounds like with Hardesty too is a lot of fans can't get over the fact of where someone's drafted. Hardesty, oh, he's a second-round pick. He's got to produce like a second-round pick. You see that all the time with the guys who are the former high draft picks get chances multiple times in multiple places when they don't pan out. Whereas a guy like Peyton Hillis, you know, he came from nowhere and he's more of a proven commodity. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the running back situation. But the running back situation aside, let's talk about some actual real serious substance here. This is a Cleveland team in the preseason. I remember when we spoke here on National Football Authority Radio. By the way, this is Matt Baxnell standing here with Daniel Wolf, the CEO, and he is the king of Browns coverage for National Football Authority. But Dan, I remember in the preseason you said that you thought the Browns were looking at a roughly 8-8 type season. They started to really improve and maybe start to position themselves as being a contender next year. But right now, what we've seen from the Browns has been pretty disheartening. Last place in the AFC North behind the hated Bengals. Where do the Browns sort of stand right now in terms of the plan that Mike Sherman had laid out for this team? And how do the fans really deal with the situation right now? Is there a lot of optimism from the fans as where the direction that the Browns are going? Or are people continuing to say it's the same old Browns?
Well, knowing the Browns for as long as I've been breathing and can remember, I mean, the fan base always goes in the season with high expectations and lots of optimism. And I think it's because of, as you alluded to earlier, the jadedness of what's happened in the city when it comes to its sports teams. But really, you know, 8-8 wasn't me going above and beyond any type of prediction. Right now they're 2-3. I think there are a lot bigger concerns right now, and there's really a big issue with perspective of the Browns when it comes to especially the fan base. And the fan base, well, when I say perspective, is they're looking at a rookie head coach brand new system being installed on this team for offense and defense, and the team is struggling. You know, they're not firing on all cylinders. They're barely 2-3. And then you look over on the West Coast and you see Jim Harbaugh taking his San Francisco 49ers to a 5-1 record, and he's a rookie coach and who just installed a brand new offensive system there as well. Now, the biggest difference when it comes to perspective is that you're looking at a Browns team that was one of the oldest teams in the NFL last year, and they had a high roster turnover to go to being one of the youngest teams in the NFL this year, which means that they have a lot of inexperience, a lot of youth. Whereas the Niners, they didn't have any turnover when it comes to their roster, at least not as high of a turnover as the Browns. Plus, they already had some established playmakers on that roster. So the perspective of, you know, if Harbaugh can do it, Shurmur should be able to do it. You know, they both had the same amount of time. The rookie head coaches, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's really it's not a fair example. And the perspective right now is the Browns are 2-3. Their only two victories are against the Miami Dolphins and the Indianapolis Colts, who the Dolphins they beat in the last minute of the game. The Colts, they barely escaped. And what's the records of both of those teams?
2-6.
Exactly.
They have no wins. And you're
exactly
right. The Browns fans have to be looking at it and saying, hey, we beat two high school JV teams. Great.
Yeah. And the Browns fans want, you know, this winning franchise, and that's fine. It's understandable. But at the same time, you know, they're facing a lot more challenges, a lot more uphill battles, which I guess is really my point of using Jim Harbaugh and the 49ers as a comparison. You know, they already had a lot of things established and set in place, especially when it comes to playmakers and talent on the roster. Whereas the
there's no Willis on the Browns. Let's be honest here.
There's no Patrick Willis. There's no Vernon Davis. You know, there's a Joe Hayden. There's, you know, a Peyton Hillis, and you know, besides a few other names here and there, you know, there's no real big playmaking stars. You know, the Niners also already had Frank Gore in place. They also had a young offensive line that, you know, is obviously, you know, really solid. And speaking of offensive line, when it comes to the Browns offensive line, right now, you know, they're starting two rookies more or less at two guard positions on their line with Sean Lavau and Jason Pinkston. Yes, Jason Pinkston is a true rookie, but Lavau didn't play a single down or snap last year. So really he might be in his second year, but he's still considered a rookie in my eyes, at least. And, you know, a lot of the struggles that the Browns are finding are in those trenches right there, because they're struggling finding a passing attack. They're struggling finding a rushing attack right now. And it's because of the line. And right now, even though he's on injured reserve, Eric Steinbach, who is our starting left guard, who hasn't been able to play all season, is really showing his value at this point, not being on the team. And you know, just having him on that in that lineup could have completely changed the outcome of many games and, you know, the record so far this season.
So the value over replacement for Steinbach is off the charts right now, is what you're saying.
Yeah, Steinbach's value is really showing its worth at this point with him not being able to play.
Well, you know, you need a good offensive line in the National Football League, especially the young quarterback like Colt McCoy under center. You know, I think this is one thing. We talked about this in the preseason, too. And for the record, I thought 8-8 was pretty reasonable for this Browns team in the preseason as well. But I think one thing with McCoy is a lot of Browns fans look at him as this big winner in college, and there's a lot of people who have slathered a lot of praise on him. And to me, I think a lot of Browns fans automatically expect him to be a top-flight NFL quarterback now that he's only in his second season. Fact of the matter is, he's still only in his second season. And let's face it, it takes a while for a quarterback to really find their footing in the NFL. Not everyone's going to be Ben Roethlisberger and win the Super Bowl in his first 2 years. And even when Roethlisberger won that Super Bowl, he wasn't the reason they won the Super Bowl. He was on a significantly more talented team at virtually every other position. So I think Browns fans, you know, I know they desperately want to win. And they're one of the most loyal fan bases in the NFL. I kind of put them with the Bills in that regard, and that their team has not been good for a very long time, but those fans still care. But I think Browns fans need to realize it is a multiple-step process to get there. And I think the big point of this season is taking a step in the right direction. Now, I guess my question for you is where do you foresee this going here in the next few weeks? Are the Browns going to take the steps to really start growing towards being a competitive team in the future,
or is it still going to kind of be shuffling their way around to a last-place finish in the division?
I honestly think at this point in the season, they're going to be doing some shuffling around. You know, what their record's going to be at the end at this point, I really couldn't tell you. I hope and, you know, pray that it will be an 8-8 season. It might be a 6-10 or a 7-9 season. But, you know, looking at the schedule, you know, this next weekend on Sunday, they're at home versus the Seahawks. You know, it could be a winnable game. After that, they travel out to San Francisco, which, you know, I just talked about, and San Francisco's 5-1, so that's going to be a tough game. Then there's Houston. That's going to be rough. St. Louis, okay, you know, we're looking at, you know, a winless team as of right now. Then Jacksonville, and then Cincinnati. But then once you get into those last 5 weeks of the season, you're playing the Steelers and the Ravens twice each in those last 5 weeks. So at this point,
that's brutal.
At this point, with being 2-3, I can see maybe I'm going to give them at least 3 to 4 more wins on this schedule for the remainder of the season, and hopefully, you know, they will finish up 7-9 if my math serves me correctly at this point in this season.
Well, 3 to 4 more wins right now is 5 or 6 on the year, and I can tell you I have a lot of good friends who are Browns fans. I mean, I went to Ohio State, and a lot of my friends are Northeastern Ohioans. They're big Browns fans, and I think 6-10 would be a real kick to the gut for a lot of people with this team because of the notoriety of bringing in a guy like Mike Sherman to take over, Holmgren. If I said Sherman earlier, I apologize. Mike Sherman is the head coach of Texas A&M. Holmgren, who has taken two franchises to the Super Bowl. But anyways, he's a big name, apparently, except for me. You know, I think a lot of people expected a lot of him right away. And, you know, I think that Browns fans, like I said, it's a process for them. And especially if the Bengals continue playing decent football, the in-state rival who beat them on opening day, if the Bengals have a better season than the Browns, I know a lot of Clevelanders are going to be tearing their hair out.
Oh, I completely agree. And the one thing you have to, you know, think about when it comes to Mike Holmgren is that, yeah, he's in year two of his rule of, you know, being the president of the organization. But really, this is technically year one because he finally has his staff in place when it comes to the coaching, staff. I mean, if Holmgren fails with the Browns, you can quote me on this right now, but it'll be because he was too nice and had too soft of a heart, and he kept Eric Mangini around last year when he should have just hit the reset button right then and there. And then at this point, we'd be in year two of the entire regime instead of, you know, year kind of, you know, number one, which even though it's number two, it's still number one with his crew in place, you know.
And that's a big setback, too, because, you know, when you talk about rebuilding college football, coach gets 4, 5, 6 years sometimes. The NFL, it's 3 that you often see coaches turn through. They get a 3-year cycle to turn around. So if this is number 2 on that 3-year cycle and they only win 5 or 6 games, then year 3 is going to be a lot of pressure from a fan base that we all know really wants to win. So I guess it's going to be a very interesting second half of the season. Well, not even second half, I guess the rest of the season here in Cleveland. And I certainly will be watching the Browns with a lot of interest. But while we're talking about the state of Ohio, Dan, I do want to bring up one other thing with you. The Cincinnati
sure.
Bengals just made a huge trade.
Yes, they did.
A stunning trade on so many fronts in my book. First of all, okay, the trade I'm, of course, talking about is Carson Palmer to the Raiders for a guaranteed first-round pick in next year's draft and a conditional first-round pick that will be no worse than a second rounder in the 2013 draft. Now, this shocks me on a number of fronts. First of all, I never thought Mike Brown would actually trade Carson Palmer. But second of all, I never thought that they'd get an offer remotely close to what could be 2 first-round draft picks for Carson Palmer.
It almost makes you think that, like, Al Davis is still working the deals.
I don't even know if Al Davis would have approved this heavy of a deal. I mean, people act like, you know, Carson Palmer's the same guy we saw in 2005. He's going to ride in on a silver and black horse and save the Raiders' playoff hopes because they've had a nice start to the season. To me, this is an utter failure on the half of the Raiders, especially considering how few draft picks they have next year. But for the Bengals, this is an unbelievable boon to what looks like a pretty successful start to their rebuilding process with Andy Dalton and A.J. Green from last year's draft. Does it feel the same way to you that the Bengals just hit an absolute home run?
I have no idea what really happened to Bengals front office, but all of a sudden they just get it. And, you know, landing a deal like this and having the draft that they just had this year with A.J. Green and Andy Dalton, I mean, it seems like there's completely different people running that organization at this point. And kudos to Marvin Lewis for sticking it out, because, you know, if he can get this team to perform with a rookie quarterback and a rookie wide receiver, sorry, too much to say in one breath.
It's all right. We're so confused that Bengals are doing something right. I stumble over words.
Yeah, you know what? That has to be it at this point. But the fact that, you know, that Marvin Lewis has been able to do what he's been able to do with these young guys, you know, he almost looks like a genius at this point, and he's probably going to get his contract extension that he wasn't sure that he wanted when this season started.
Yeah, well, I think it's a lot different atmosphere without a lot of those old veterans, Ocho Cincos, you know, who, let's face it, were not really good for the locker room. And Cincinnati's a franchise that, you know, we talked about the front office here. They didn't even employ a full staff. They've never had a general manager. You know, Mike Brown has been the owner / guy who runs this entire team. And I can't tell you how many Bengals fans I know who have just absolutely hated the way their franchise has been run. But maybe this was just a great deal that fell into their laps for Carson Palmer. Maybe it was an absolute perfect timing with the way Jason Campbell was injured. I mean, maybe it was the absolute best-case scenario. But right now, the Bengals look like they are going to be in position to succeed in the next couple of years going forward with all these extra picks. But
let's
remember, this is the Bengals, so, you know, you never know. They probably will screw it up.
Very, very, very true. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if Browns linebacker Scott Fujita is getting, like, a bunch of presents and gift cards and fruit baskets sent his way because from Cincinnati, because he was the one who took Campbell out, too.
Well, there you go. All right, Dan, well, before we let you go and bring on Russell Baxter, I wanted to ask you one final question. The Green Bay Packers right now have looked as good as anybody has looked starting through six games in my recent memory. Are they going to pull it off, and are they going to repeat what the Patriots did a few years ago? Do they go undefeated in the regular season?
Not sure if they're going to go undefeated, but right now I think I'm secure with myself to say that they are – easily the front runner to win the Super Bowl, especially for the fact that they're not dealing with 15 of their players on injured reserve right now, and they're pretty healthy.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, well, Dan, thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Daniel Wolf. You can follow him at Daniel Wolf NFL on Twitter. And of course, he's all over National Football Authority. I mean, he's the CEO. Well, Dan, thank you so much for coming on, and let's continue down here.
Thank you.
NFL Writers lineup. Let's bring on Russell Baxter. He is the Pro Football Guru. Russell, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And I guess let's pick up right where I left off here with Dan, talking about the Green Bay Packers. You know, I think I have to agree with Dan completely that they're the favorite to win the Super Bowl right now. But what do you think about the Packers repeating as Super Bowl champions? And do you think that they can pull it off and be the first team since the Miami Dolphins to go undefeated and win the Super Bowl?
Well, listen, I think they have an excellent shot at it, and I'm one of those people who doesn't look at schedules. I mean, to me, the NFL, when you look at schedules in the NFL, this is not college football. You don't get to schedule who you want, per se. You don't get to do a home-and-home series over 10 years and so on. You have to play who's put in front of you, and as you well know, the schedule, there's a lot of luck involved in it. You know, it's basically done on like an 8-year rotation plan as far as who you play in the other division, another division in your conference, and who you play interconference. It's a 4-year rotation in terms of that. I mean, there's really only two slotted games as to where you finish now. If you're a first-place team, the one division you're not playing, or the two divisions you're not playing in their entirety, you have to play the first-place teams there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, to me, scheduling doesn't really play a factor in saying, well, this is an easy game, that's a hard game, et cetera, et cetera. It's just the way they are playing. They're playing with a lot of confidence. And we've seen them a couple times this year, you know, go on the road at Carolina and go on the road at Atlanta and fall behind 13-0 and fall behind 14-0 and rebound and win those games. So, you know, they've got – you want to talk about a hot quarterback. I mean, you've got Aaron Rodgers completing over 70% of his passes this year. And get this for a number. If you go back at Aaron Rodgers' last 16 games, which includes his playoff run as well, He's thrown 42 touchdown passes and 7 interceptions. That's a nice, tidy 6-to-1 ratio. You know, we talk about the great year that Tom Brady had in 2007 in the regular season when he threw 50 and just 8 interceptions. Those are those kind of numbers. And you combine the fact that one thing the Packers are much improved in this year is their run defense. Their pass defense numbers are elevated. There's not about that, but they are getting the takeaways. Can't always count on those. But, you know, they've got a lot of savvy veteran defenders. They've got a lot of youth on that side of the ball. They've got an excellent kicking game with Mason Crosby. You know, a rookie returner in Randall Cobb that's made his share of big plays. They're pretty stacked overall and healthier than they were at this time last year, no doubt about that. So I think they have an excellent chance of running the table for quite a while. You know, it's unfortunate that the Lions lost last week to San Francisco because I was kind of hoping the Lions and the Packers would both be undefeated when they met on Thanksgiving Day this year.
Oh, that would have been an absolutely fantastic showdown to see. But you know what? I still think that's going to be a pretty darn good football game. You know, it was the last time we looked forward to a Lions game on Thanksgiving. But, you know, you make a very good point about Aaron Rodgers. You're talking about all the stats he has put up here, the 6-to-1 touchdown interception ratio, 70% completions. And, you know, we made a little bit of comparison to college a moment ago. Mm-hmm. He reminds me of one of the Hawaii quarterbacks, or Case Keenum down at Houston, who's just throwing the ball all over the place, completing 7 out of 10 passes, not throwing any picks, and his receivers are seemingly always open. And he's doing that against NFL-level competition. To me, Aaron Rodgers is playing at a completely different level than any other quarterback in football right now.
Absolutely. He really is. And I think his numbers this year is 17 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. He's only fumbled once in 6 games. He didn't lose the fumble. And that's pretty good for a guy who is on the move as much as he can be, rolling out of pocket and also running downfield. The dimension that Aaron Rodgers also gives you is that he'll run for touchdowns as well. So, I mean, he does a little bit of everything, and I think they just seem like they're playing with such supreme confidence. And, you know, this is not that unusual. If you go back through history, and this is a hard thing to kind of gauge, but when you find teams that surprisingly win Super Bowls, okay, and I don't mean that, you know, it's a, you know, like I said, it's hard to put a gauge on it, but you like the Dallas Cowboys in 1992, they weren't supposed to really go. They were like a year ahead of time. When they went out to San Francisco and won the championship game and then blew out Buffalo. In 93, they came back a more confident football team. And it was almost like they stole the championship in 92. The Denver Broncos, when they won it as a wild card in 97, remember, they came back the following year, talk about making a run and undefeated. They went 13-0 and then repeated as Super Bowl champions. And you look at this team right now in Green Bay, remember, they were a 10-6 ball club last year and almost needed a couple breaks at the end of the year to reach the playoffs.
There's no question they needed those breaks, absolutely.
Right. And then they went on a tear, and they got hot, and they did it with a lot of guys who were on injured reserve, and suddenly they come back a lot healthier and a lot more confident and say, hey, if we were able to do this last year with everything we overcame, and lots of teams overcome injuries, but they definitely had a large rash of them. If we can do it that last year, let's come back here even better and healthier and more talented. And I don't think there's any question that they're the team to beat right now. I'm always partial to champions until dethroned, but this is one pretty hefty championship team.
Yeah, this isn't saying, oh, they won the title last year, so we're going to call them the champs until someone takes it from them.
Right.
Right now they're playing like champions, no question whatsoever. But you know, we've been talking about Aaron Rodgers here for a while, and there's no question that the Green Bay offense is a major, major factor. But that was something we talked about a couple weeks ago here on National Football Authority Radio. By the way, this is Russell Baxter joining us. He is the pro football guru here on National Football Authority Radio. And, you know, Russell, we talked about how the NFL was on pace to have one of the highest scoring seasons in the history of the National Football League. In fact, if I remember correctly, you said it was on pace to have the most 300-yard passing performances of any individual season by a wide margin. Now, since we last talked, has the offenses sort of slowed down a little bit? Has the defenses sort of finally got their feet underneath them? Maybe it's just me kind of looking at it from a completely layman's perspective, but it seems like there's a little bit less scoring. I know my fantasy football scores aren't quite as high as they were the first few weeks of the season. Have the defenses sort of adjusted to what's going on? And has maybe the fact that we had a lockout affected the way the defense has started the season?
Well, it's interesting you say that. And listen, you know, stats are stats, and I love numbers as much as anybody. But, you know, you said from a layman's point of view, football is an eye test, okay? The numbers don't always match up sometimes. More times they do, but, you know, unlike other sports, you can't get bogged down with certain statistics when it comes to football. You're seeing it. You saw it this past week. Numbers bear it out. But you've seen it the last couple weeks. You know, there wasn't as much scoring. There weren't as many 300-yard passing games. You could see that, and it's a game of adjustments, okay? We saw 44 300-yard passing performances in the first 4 weeks of the season. Now, granted, the last 2 weeks, we have not seen as many games played. There were only 13 games played in week 5, 13 games in week 6, same thing this week because the byes have kicked in. But I think it's interesting to note that over the last 2 weeks, there have been 19 100-yard rushing performances and only a dozen 300-yard passing games combined the last 2 weeks. So it hasn't been a little bit of a slowdown. The memo went out. Guess what? The defensive guys are getting paid this year too. And, you know, you saw this past weekend, of the 26 teams that played, only the Bears and the Falcons got the 30 points this weekend. So you saw a lot of teams under 20. You know, you saw a couple defensive struggles around the league. It was kind of almost worthwhile to see that. You know, everybody adjusts. Everybody sees what's going on. I think what I found also interesting this past week was the number of long runs that were broken off by running backs. And it was almost like now teams are expecting teams to pass. And defenses are blitzing or their front four is coming hard. And how about a delay? How about a draw play and breaking off a big one? So you saw more running game. You saw a little more defense. And, you know, it might be like that for a few weeks. And then it might flow back the other way. So, you know, it was a different kind of off season with the lockout. And I think all year it's going to be a different kind of football season.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you were talking about adjustments. I mean, let's face it, there's been some film out the last couple weeks here from the first few weeks when the offenses were owning things. And, you know, you're right. The defenses are collecting paychecks too. The defensive coaches are smart people. They're going to eventually make changes so that their defense is in a better position to succeed. There's no question about it.
Listen,
so,
I think defenses, you know, I over the years, and you know this as well as anyone, you know, the rules have always been adjusted in the NFL to favor the offense, okay?
Yes.
I can't remember the last time there was a defensive ruling that was in favor for defenders, okay? You know, you can only touch the guy and he'll be down or something. I'm being sarcastic, of course. But, you know, I think the last couple of weeks it's almost like the defensive guys and the defensive coordinators took it a little personally after they saw what was happening the first 4 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there completely on both points. I mean, you're right. I don't remember the last time a defense had anything done rules-wise in their favor. I mean, you know, what the rule is in all sports, more scoring equals more fans equals more money. So
yep.
There's no question about it there. But let's talk about a couple teams, by the way, that aren't really doing much scoring. I know you got some stuff coming out of NationalFootballAuthority.com about some quarterback changes that may be happening around the NFL. But let's talk about the most obvious one that's upcoming here. Carson Palmer being traded to the Oakland Raiders in what to me seems like the biggest fleecing I've ever seen. How the Bengals got two potential first-round picks for Carson Palmer stuns me. But I guess let's talk about the Raiders here. What the impact do you think Carson Palmer's going to have? And what are some of the other quarterback changes that we're seeing this week, and how will that affect the season going forward?
Well, it's really kind of interesting. Here we have seen the first 6 weeks of the season where there were only three quarterback changes. Now, you know, obviously no Peyton Manning, but, I mean, the Colts started the season with Kerry Collins, and now they've gone to Curtis Painter. The Jaguars are now on their second quarterback of the year in Blaine Gabbert. And, of course, Chad Henne got hurt in Miami, and now we have Matt Moore in Miami. This week alone, we're going to have at least four quarterback changes, and depending on what happens with the Seahawks, you know, it's Tavares Jackson going to be healthy. Remember, he was hurt a couple of weeks ago in the win over the Giants, and Charlie Whitehurst had to come in. So we could see as many as five, but it looks like we're definitely going to see four, regardless if at the last moment. It's not Carson Palmer, and all indications is that it's going to be Carson Palmer against the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, you know, to me, that's – I think it's more surprising that Carson Palmer is going to start this week than it is that they actually acquired him, to be really honest with you. And, you know, listen, you can debate on the price that the Raiders gave up to get him and so on. You know, everybody, I guess, has their price. And I know Mike Brown was adamant on they were not going to trade him and so on. But, I mean, it's like the old line in The Godfather. He, obviously, there was an offer that was made you couldn't refuse. And, you know, I personally think it could work out very, very well for both of them. And, listen, we haven't seen Carson in a while. And he's coming off a year where, listen, he threw for almost 4,000 yards. He threw for 26 touchdowns. He did throw 20 interceptions, and five of those interceptions were actually returned for touchdowns. So we could pad his other touchdown stats a little, but it's the kind of things you don't want to do. And listen, you know, the Carson Palmer that we saw at the beginning of his career is much different than what we've seen as of late. I mean, there's no doubt to me the knee injury in 05 in the playoff game against the Steelers and other injuries he's had. Remember, he missed a big chunk of a season a couple of years ago as well. I think they've kind of taken his toll. But listen, he did help the Bengals win the division title in 2009 when they swept through the division. I know Cedric Benson was a large part of that as well. And what a novel concept. Here's a quarterback relying on a running game. Well, he's in a good spot right now with the Oakland Raiders, you know, who are second in the league in rushing. No one runs it more often. And, you know, they're kind of a balanced football team. They're actually – and as I wrote about in for the piece this week, they're somewhat reminiscent of the very balanced Bengals when Carson Palmer was there with Rudy Johnson, Chad Ochocinco, T.J. Houshmandzadeh. Those were very balanced, efficient football teams. And what a coincidence. They had a wide receiver coach there for 3 years named Hugh Jackson, which is big reason.
Now?
Yeah, so, of course, a big reason – Carson is in Oakland because Jackson, of course, who was the offensive coordinator last year and now the head coach of the Oakland Raiders this year. You can always connect the dots when it comes to trades and free agency around this league. So
and that's a pretty straight line connection there. There's no question.
Absolutely. I mean, you can do that one with an Etch-a-Sketch. That's right on the money. And it'll be interesting. It's obviously, the Raiders are getting ready for a big stretch. They're 4-2, are off to their best start since they last made the playoffs in 2002. Their next three games, and there's a bye in there too, are against all divisional foes. You know, they've got Kansas City, Denver, and San Diego coming up. The game with San Diego is going to be much anticipated. I believe that's a Thursday night game, which will, if you remember last year, neither one of those teams won the division. San Diego had, you know, won it four straight years and missed the playoffs last year. Oakland was a perfect 6-0 to division and became the first team to do that and not win a division title, and they both look like the two front runners there right now. So the next 3 or 4 weeks for the Oakland Raiders are going to tell us a lot.
Yeah, it'd be hard to imagine the Chargers or the Raiders not emerging out of the West this year. I honestly, unless Tim Tebow is better than all of us expect and actually can complete some passes, those two are the clear front runners. There's no question about it. But I guess we'll transition from the AFC West. Let's go back to the AFC North here. I talked a lot earlier with Dan about the Bengals, a lot earlier with Dan about the Browns, but let's talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens. They're the two teams that are really the ones who are competing to win that division, and I think most people's opinions. And the Bengals are a nice story, but I think it all comes down to Baltimore-Pittsburgh. But in the end, do you think this Ravens team is really different from the past Ravens teams that we've seen that have, you know, had a good defense, have made the playoffs and then fallen short? Or is this kind of the team this year that can really make a run at the Super Bowl for the first time in a decade?
Well, there seems to be a little more of a ferocity to the Ravens this year. You know, if you saw that opener against Pittsburgh, I mean,
having turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, but if you watch them offensively as well in that game, and they ran the ball on Pittsburgh for 170 yards. They had their foot on Pittsburgh's throat, and they kept pushing. And that's not something you've seen. One of the more interesting stats about the Ravens last year, okay, and this is one of the better, what we say, one of the better defensive teams in the league, okay? Last year in the fourth quarter and overtime, they gave up 122 points, okay? Wow. Now, I'll put that in perspective. The previous year, in 2009, they gave up less than that in the second half. of the season. Okay, in the second half of games, they gave up fewer than that. So they went from being a team that could close to a team that couldn't close. This year so far, now it's only five games, so it's a short sample. They've given up 6 points in the fourth quarter. And that's the different part. They start fast, outscore their opponents 59-7 in the first quarter, outscore them 26-6 in the fourth quarter. You know, other than the little hiccup they had, and it was a letdown game against the Tennessee Titans, who, you know, are a little better than people expected. You know, they blew out the Rams by 30. They manhandled the Jets. The Jets' offense never got into the end zone. And then last week, you know, fell a little behind by Houston, but when they had to do it, they did it. And there just seems to be a different energy with the Ravens this year. Now, granted, there's a long way to go, and they have a rematch with Pittsburgh in a couple of weeks. But I would have to say that them and New England right now, and I don't discount Buffalo, and I don't discount Cincinnati, and of course you can never discount Pittsburgh as well. But right now, as far as the AFC goes, I think Baltimore and New England look like the two best teams in the conference. There's a long way to go, obviously, but for different reasons, the Ravens and the Patriots look pretty fierce right now.
Well, the Ravens and the Patriots, I think I have to agree with you, look like the two best teams in the AFC. I guess the only other question that I would have for you is that in the NFC, we talked earlier about the Packers. They're clearly the favorites, not just the NFC, but to win the Super Bowl. Aside from the Lions in division, is there anybody else in the NFC you think is really going to be able to give the Packers a major challenge?
Well, listen, there's definitely a little attitude going on in San Francisco right now. I mean, there is a growing confidence with that team. I think at times they've always felt like they had the players. You know, their quarterback has been, you know, he had a couple turnovers last week, but he's been much better this year in terms of securing the ball. Of course, we're talking about Alex Smith. You know, for them to, you know, they've made a lot of trips, you know, a lot gets made about them coming east all year, and for them to go into Detroit and cool off the Lions the way they did, and you have to be impressed by that. And it'll be just interesting to see how they progress. And I know, like, you know, it's funny, a lot of people well, you know, they'll run away with the division, and, you know, it you have to be playing well. It doesn't matter who you beat, okay? You don't get, like, oh, you're going to get, you know, an extra win and a half because you beat an undefeated team. No, it's still a win is a win, and a loss is a loss. And, you know, if the Niners continue to play with the intensity they're playing, they're going to be a team that wins 11 or 12 games. You know, they, again, their defense, their front seven, has been lights out for most of the year. Their offense, which started very slow in terms of moving the football, has gained confidence. And it really kind of started with that, you know, third quarter rally in Philadelphia. Remember, they were down by 20 points. Came back.
Yeah, I thought that game was over.
Yeah, and then came back and won that game and then blew out Tampa. And then last week in a back and forth with the Lions, they got the best of the Lions. So, I mean, remember, the Lions hadn't lost in a while going back to last year. So could San Francisco be the team that challenges Green Bay? Right now, to me, what I find most interesting, I'll go jump back to the Packers for a second, is the fact that they have somebody like the Lions who are chasing them, okay? You know, up until last week, the Lions were keeping pace. Now the Lions are chasing them. And, you know, the best thing that can ever happen is to be continuously challenged. Sometimes mm-hmm. if you win a division running away, by the end of the year, for lack of a better word, I think you can get a little bored and or a little complacent. And
get off your game. We saw with the Colts a couple times.
Well, I think, to me, I think there, you know, I find it interesting. And you've seen this in recent years, okay? I remember the Pittsburgh Steelers were a 15-1 team in 2004, okay, and were always having trouble making it to the Super Bowl. And then they had to do it the hard way in 2005. Remember, they were on the verge of getting knocked out of the playoffs. They got in, won three straight road playoff games, and won a Super Bowl, okay? The New York Giants, a couple years after that, you know, same thing. They had to take that. Remember, three times in the last 6 years, a wild card team has won the Super Bowl. You just brought up the Colts, and I think there's no better example than them. Think of all the years that they've had these shots at undefeated seasons and took their foot off the pedal, okay? But the year that they did win the Super Bowl, they were a third seed, and they had to play three playoff games to get there. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
San Diego was the one that year. Baltimore was the two. And number three, Indianapolis, hosted number four, New England, in the AFC title game. Another reason you should try to always win all your football games and don't try to position yourself in terms of, well, I'd rather play this team in the playoffs instead of that team in the playoffs. I hear fans say that all the time, and I just chuckle. I mean, you're actually going to choose who you want to play in the playoffs?
Yeah, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for is exactly right. So I always find it ironic that the year the Colts had to do it the hard way, they actually got it done. And, you know, I think they will always regret, and I have said this since the day it happened, taking their foot off the pedal in 2009 when they were 14-0 and not trying to win the last couple of weeks and trying to preserve their players. Now, they got to the Super Bowl, but they lost the Super Bowl, and it's different. I think when you have the chance to win a football game, you take the chance and you try to win that football game, okay? I understand preserving players for health reasons, but, you know, you're yanking a quarterback, ironically, who's now hurt, who had never gotten hurt. And, you know, this is about competition. This is about winning. And when you get the chance to win, you should try to win. And, I think that has hurt that hurt the Colts that year, 2 years ago. And in some ways, I don't think they ever recovered from it. And I think when you look at the Packers this year, who suddenly see a team chasing them that maybe, just maybe, they weren't totally expecting. And listen, I'm not writing off the Bears, okay? They're 3-3. They're not that far. They're not that far behind. Although the Packers did beat them in Chicago this year, competition is healthy. Okay, getting things too easy, you know, sometimes leads to bad things at the end of the year. We see these teams who rest. You know, you see it all the time. These guys who rest players at the end of the year, more times than not, they wind up not winning those Super Bowls.
They end up losing the first round more often than it feels like.
Well, you get flat. You get flat. You get complacent and so on. Why do we always talk about football, breaking, you know, the players, you know, getting out of their routine? Well, getting out of routine of trying to win a game is the worst routine you can ever break. You always want to try to win a game.
And what's one of the oldest rules of sports, not just football, of sports? If you're not getting better, then you're getting worse. Right, if you're not doing your best to improve every day, somebody else is. And you know what? At the end of football season, a lot of these teams who have had to force their way through into a wild card situation, they're scratching, they're clawing, they're raising their level of play. And by the time you decide that you can waltz out there all fat and happy after clinching everything that you looked for 3 weeks early, then you end up getting drilled because you're fat and happy.
Well, not to interrupt, but it's like the notion I have heard from numerous people, not players and coaches, but other people, of quote unquote losing all your games, insinuating a team would lose its games on purpose in order to have the first pick in the draft and get Andrew Luck. I mean, you can't possibly be serious if you're really thinking that way. Okay,
no.
I mean, it doesn't work that way. Okay, no one player is going to resurrect your franchise. And if you are, the notion that anybody would do that, I mean, but, it's really funny with some of the theories that people come up with.
Yeah, I think a team sport like football, it's a lot more difficult to do something like that. You saw it back in the day in the NHL before they instituted a draft lottery, the Pittsburgh Penguins and the New Jersey Devils lost something like 15 out of their last 20 games apiece trying to get Mario Lemieux. But in a team game like football where you have 11 guys on the field, to me that seems next to impossible to do. I don't buy into this quote-unquote suck for luck campaign that we've seen going on in a lot of places. So I think it's ridiculous. But Russell.
Here's what I will say. The last team I saw was actually a person who tried to lose a game. It was Paul Crewe in the longest yard. And guess what? They wound up winning the game anyway. So history will tell you it just doesn't work.
Yeah, this despite the best efforts of mice and men, things turn around against you, right? So.
Right.
All right, well, that's Russell Baxter, ladies and gentlemen. Russell, where can everybody follow you on Twitter and read your work outside of National Football Authority?
That would be at Bax, B-A-X, Football Guru. We tweet constantly, and, you can also find some of my work on footballpros.com, and my website, which includes all my work, which is profootballguru.com. So we had all the bases covered. If you love football like I do, check us out.
I couldn't recommend it more highly. This man is a king of statistics. There's no question whatsoever. Russell, thanks so much for coming on National Football Authority Radio tonight.
You got it, my friend.
All right. Many thanks to Russell Baxter. Many thanks to Daniel Wolf for coming on the show tonight. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to National Football Authority Radio this week. We'll be back next week with plenty more talk about the world of football, both college and pro. Have a great night, and take care.